member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 27th day of July. Where is this year going? Anno Domini 2024, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues if you paid your dues.
One thing we should mention to folks getting into this show is we've got the stream going, but we do not have live cameras.
Well, we have two. We have his and mine. You're the one off camera.
I said, we don't have cameras.
You're the great and powerful Oz over there.
Yeah. That's the way I like to keep it. That's why I was mentioning.
Of mystery.
Right.
The mystery behind the mic.
Right. And as you heard, we have the amazing Dennis Worster with us today.
Thank you. Yes.
Steve Ray, one step ahead of the law, somewhere in the Southwest.
Again.
Sitting on the fender of his Camaro as he stares off into the desert distance.
With his cowboy hat pulled down over his brow.
A slow pull on his cigarette.
And another one on his Colt 45.
Yeah, that's right.
And I mean the beer, not the firearm.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And we're delighted to have Dennis with us. I'm obligated to say that, but it's true.
It's in my rider, yeah.
All right, and here's the news. Samsung recently notified Galaxy phone owners that it was dropping Samsung Messages as the preloaded messaging app on its devices, starting with the Galaxy Z Flip 6 and Z Fold 6. Instead, the company will preload Google Messages on these and future phones. Samsung and Google have been closely working together on many communication service areas in this collaborative effort to make Google Messages the default common messaging platform for the Android mobile ecosystem will accelerate the adoption of rich communication services, or RCS, and deliver a more robust and engaging mobile messaging experience to Galaxy owners. The rollout is currently limited to the U.S. RCS is the successor to the SMS standard, the text messaging, for sending and receiving messages over the Internet or over the phone carrier.
Right.
Which is not the Internet.
Not exactly.
RCS also, it connects to the Internet.
Right.
So I guess everything's the Internet when you get right down.
It goes between networks, so it's inter-networks.
Inter-network, yeah, it's true. RCS,
we'll allow it.
The judge says we'll allow it.
We'll allow it.
RCS also offers high-quality media sharing, voice notes, typing indicators, and more. It's not immediately clear how Samsung's switch to Google Messages will grow RCS usage and adoption. However, Google Messages supports RCS functionality regardless of the carrier, while RCS support in Samsung Messages is seemingly dependent on the mobile network. So adopting the Google Messages could make for a more streamlined, intuitive approach for consumers wanting to use the new generation texting standard. That said, Google Messages currently lags behind Samsung Messages when it comes to sending and receiving images via RCS. Samsung's client is able to send uncompressed images via RCS, whereas Google's texting app heavily compresses pictures. Google is working on a solution. I don't know how big a solution that is. You just don't compress. Okay. It's worth noting that Galaxy phone owners with Samsung Messages can continue to use Samsung's texting app. Samsung also said it will still let users download Samsung Messages via the Galaxy Store if they'd like to keep using it. Yet, nevertheless, the company is clearly putting its texting eggs in the Google basket. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Samsung is changing their default messaging app to Google Messages. Your choices are no, con, I'm already switched, I'm already confused, so, and Samsung. So far, we've got 25 votes, and Samsung is about half of them, followed by I'm already confused. Followed by so. Two people said no. Two people have already switched. The interesting thing about Google Messages is that it being part of the Google ecosystem It allows you to save all your messages on your Google Drive.
Right.
So what I have found with friends who have switched phones,
okay,
is if they switch from a Samsung phone to a Samsung phone, usually but not always, the messages follow them.
Okay.
If they switch from a Samsung phone to anything else,
sure,
like they lose the messages.
Like a Pixel.
Right, or like a Pixel phone.
Okay.
So if you're using Google Messages on Samsung and decide to switch to any other Android phone, you can get your messages back by, again, using Google Messages on that other phone.
Hmm.
So they'll all be there for you.
Okay.
And Samsung messaging is a little...
special.
Special in many ways. It does allow you to send uncompressed images. But honestly, who cares? You're looking at them on this tiny little screen to begin with.
Right.
Who cares how compressed they are? You're still going to see essentially the same quality picture, whether it's compressed or uncompressed.
Yeah, you're looking at it, I don't know, what, 6-inch screen?
Yeah, exactly. It's ludicrous to care.
I mean, if it would be a problem if you were using it to try and move pictures as a, you know, a really primitive, rudimentary way to move pictures from one place to another. If you, I'll just text them to myself or to a friend or to my other account or what have you.
Right.
Then maybe that factors in, but...
But if you're going to do that and you're on an Android phone, why not use Google Photos?
Right. But if I'm taking a picture of what I had for dinner so I can show Nick the next day.
True.
And sending it to Nick so I can talk with him about it on the show.
True.
Then the level of compression is probably not that big a deal.
Right.
Of course, who knows how tightly they've jacked up the compression on these things. So I trust it's probably not that bad.
I haven't seen an issue.
Okay.
You know, I really haven't seen an issue.
Right.
I've downloaded a couple of photos that my daughter took of various things, and they're fine.
Well, unless you're shooting RAW, it's all compressed.
Exactly right.
compression is, you know, it's not a off or on. It's kind of a dimmer dial.
Right.
So it's something to keep in mind if you think you're worried about the quality of the photos. Then moving them around via SMS or any other mobile-based protocol is probably not for you.
On the other hand, if you're moving them to someone, if you're sending them to someone who uses a Pixel phone, for example,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be compressed on their end anyway.
Yeah.
Because they're probably using Google Messages.
Right.
So it's only Samsung to Samsung.
Mm.
And again, if you're using Google Photos or Amazon Photos, we've talked about this, folks. If you're an Amazon Prime customer, you have unlimited photo storage available to you. Why are you not using it? And it's automatic. Install the app. All your pictures go up and live in the Amazon cloud, and you're done.
Yeah. And if you get any of the Echo devices, the Echo Show devices, they have the screen on them.
Yep.
Like I've got a few at my house. When that day, the wonderful thing that I like is... when it's your birthday, you see pictures of all your previous birthday parties. And when it's your kid's birthday, you see all the pictures of their parties. And if it comes up to that date a few years ago when you went to Letchworth and we're walking along the trail, you see a picture of your kids when they were 10 years ago, you know, little and cute and
yep.
and going on and seeing how far they could go before it was time for ice cream. You know, it's the kind of thing that it's really nice to see those pictures pop up.
So, the only time it's a problem is when you start seeing pictures of your first marriage.
I imagine that could
be... No, you could celebrate that.
The fact that it's done? Yeah, it's all about your point of view, I guess.
This is the voice of experience right here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, speaking of Amazon, though, and you're a Prime member.
I am.
I just saw that now The Beekeeper
yes.
is on there.
Good movie.
You got to watch it. Folks, if you don't know what I'm talking about, The Beekeeper, it sounds like, why do I want to watch a movie about bees? Well, it's a whole different thing, and it's basically about computers and computer crime.
Yep.
And how seniors and other folks are falling prey to scams, just like they just announced again. There's another scam going around for fine jewelry and all this other stuff, and people are thinking, I'm getting top dollar, and they're just being scammed.
They're being scammed.
And it's a good wake-up movie, to teach
the Jason Statham movie. So if you're an action fan, there's a lot of that as well.
Oh, good to know.
Oh, yeah. But it is a good movie, and it teaches you, you got to be cautious, especially for the elderly that are being preyed on the most.
Right.
You know, that we've had people come into the store and, you know, want to get all these gift cards because they got to pay a bill or something like that. Because that's the way they said the IRS wants it. No.
No legitimate company will ever ask for a gift card to pay a bill. No legitimate company on the planet.
There is not one. Not one.
So if somebody says, go get a gift card, hang up on them immediately.
Yeah, that's a giant red flag.
And the other thing, though, is there's some scams going around where, you know, it will try to take over your screen. And, you know, and you get these stupid messages because, you know, saying, oh, you've been hacked and all this other stuff.
Sure.
And click on this to take you so we can help you straighten this out. Best thing I can tell folks to do is if you get locked up like that, you go over to the wall, you grab that little cord that goes to the computer, pull it out, count to 30, and then plug it back in. When if you're on a Windows machine and it says restore your previous session, say no.
Right.
Just start the Explorer back up and then open up the Windows that you need again. Because what's happening is they caught wind of that people are turning it off. And then when they turn it back on, it says, do you want to restore your last session? And they're saying yes. That pop-up's right back there and locking your machine up. So say no to that, and then just go through the task of reopening.
When you restart Chrome, it asks you if you want to restore your last session.
Yep.
Say no. The reality is that 99% of this stuff is a scam. And it happened to me on the show one time. I got a big notice that said, your Windows system is compromised. Click here. Call this number. Hold your wallet up to the screen. Whatever it said.
Right.
I was on a Chromebook.
Right.
That was wild. So when you turn that around, you're seeing your Windows machine is infected.
Unlikely that my Windows machine was infected. Since I don't actually own a Windows machine, and I certainly wasn't on a Windows machine at the time. These are just pop-ups, just like pop-up ads.
Yep.
If you're running an ad blocker, it's unlikely you'll see them. If you're running without an ad blocker, you'll see these all the time. There are a lot of ad networks out. Google is only one. There are a lot of them. But every ad network is a target for these people. Because they get, you know, a million ads a minute being submitted to their systems.
Yeah, it's a numbers game.
And most of them are legitimate. You know, 99% of them are legitimate.
Yep.
And they do work at weeding out the bad ones. But because there's like a million a minute, they get hit sometimes.
Right, yeah. It's not a complete foolproof system.
Right. So it's not, you know, it used to be. Back in the day, we said, well, what sort of site were you going to see that?
It's not like that anymore.
It's not like that anymore. It happens. It can happen at your you know, you go to a radio station. They've got ads. You go to a news site. They've got ads.
Right.
You know, wherever you go, it doesn't matter. Everybody's showing ads these days. And because of that, the possibility of you seeing a pop-up ad that is a scam like that is very high. So when you see something like that, do not panic. Close the window if it will let you. Shut off your browser if it will let you. Or turn off your machine if you have to.
Right.
And as Dave said, once it starts up and you restart your browser, if it says restore previous session, say no. And it will, that I promise you, that pop-up will go away, and you'll be fine until the next time you catch one.
And if you're on a laptop, you know, Dave talked about pulling the plug on your desktop machine, but a lot of people are on laptops these days.
Right, that's true.
It's built into nearly every laptop I've ever used that if you press and hold the power button, you're going to hold it for about 6 or 8 seconds, the machine will power off. This is a backward-compatible, very primitive method for turning the computer off. But it will work and allow you to start back up.
Yep. So be very careful. When you see those messages, Douglas Adams had it said it best, don't panic.
That's right.
The fact is they want you to panic. Mm-hmm. My screen was red with giant yellow letters.
Blinking.
You're infected, blinking.
It was flashing, yeah.
Do this immediately. Armageddon, apocalypse, oh my heavens. yeah, fine. Just shut it down. You're fine. Listen, we're going to go to the phones. Our first caller is Judy from Webster, New York. What's up, Judy?
Well, I found this program on my laptop.
Okay.
It was called Bitdefender.
Okay, Bitdefender.
And I didn't put it there.
No, so Microsoft did.
Okay, but then I had a terrible time trying to delete it.
Yeah, you can turn it off, but it's very hard to get rid of because Microsoft believes you want it. And they own the computer, not you. Bitdefender is what Bitdefender does is if you turn it on, it encrypts your hard drive. The utility of that is questionable.
Now, is that Bitdefender or BitLocker?
Oh, BitLocker. Yeah, I'm thinking BitLocker.
Okay.
Because there's a story about BitLocker. This is Bitdefender. That's an antivirus program.
Yeah, it's a Kaspersky alternative.
Right.
It's an anti-malware and antivirus tool for consumers.
Okay, forget everything I said. Bitdefender is actually, it doesn't show up by itself. It is likely it got installed when you installed something else. So many of us, when we are installing something, just click next, 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 or yes, 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 and it gets installed. Alternately, it may be that it was installed as part of the load that many computer companies put on their computers when you buy them.
One way you can get rid of it, and I've done it, is if you download Revo Uninstaller.
Yeah, I did that.
Revo Uninstaller will uninstall both that BitLocker, and it'll also get rid of OneDrive if you want to get rid of that.
So what happened next, Judy, after you noticed that this was on your computer and you said you were having trouble and you mentioned Revo?
Yeah, well, it kept popping up and different things. I would be typing an email and it would pop up. And so then I decided I would just check it out and see if it was in my list of programs, and that's how I found it. And then when I tried to just delete it the first time with Revo, it kept saying it was password protected. So I called an IT guy, and he tried to explain to me what it was, but I had no idea even how it got there. So then I kept playing with Revo, and finally I clicked on repair instead of delete. And then it took me to where I could get rid of it.
Nice. Very well done. So is this a personal computer or a company computer?
Personal.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay. So again, what Bitdefender is an antivirus program. It is free. How it got on your computer, like I said, it could be that
pre-installed.
It got installed, you know, by the factory. Pre-installation. A lot of companies do that because they get paid to do that. So Bitdefender pays somebody like Dell or Lenovo or whoever to add that to Windows, and we call that bloatware or cruft or words I can't use on the air, and that's just an add-on that they put on to get more money out, you know. Instead of charging you, they charge Bitdefender for a few bucks.
Well, but this isn't a new computer, so I mean,
the other way you can get it is when you install something else. And often they have kind of ride-along programs. Again, Bitdefender pays somebody else to say, you know, one of the choices you have in installing something is, do you want to add Bitdefender?
Like an unzip program.
Right.
Yeah.
They'll package other bloatware with that.
Yeah, that's very common.
Right. And often that's software you get for free because you're not paying for it. Bitdefender's paying for it. And if we don't read the screens
carefully,
thoroughly, and we just click next, 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 that's how that sort of stuff can get on our machine.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I can't think of something that I am installed recently.
Okay.
But it could have happened. I don't know.
How long have you had this computer?
Four or five years.
Okay. Is it a Windows computer?
It is.
Okay.
Windows 10?
Windows 10. And yeah, next year, when they stop supporting it, before I buy a new one, I'm going to try Linux.
Okay.
There you go.
Well, I think that's a useful thing to do. That would let you keep your existing hardware and still have security updates from your Linux distribution, and you won't have to pay any money out of pocket to do that. So,
and you can get different,
a good idea.
Yeah, and you can get different flavors of it that you can have it set up and maybe look very darn close to your existing Windows system.
Well, one of you will have to help me with that.
Well, it's what we're here for.
You give us a call, and we'll make it happen.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All thanks, right, Judy.
Thanks for calling, Judy.
All righty.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
You know, that's something I've been doing lately. I've got, as you might expect, a basement full of old computers.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can relate.
It happens to all of us.
My name is Nick, and I have a basement full of old computers.
Yeah.
And I just got this one big 32-inch all-in-one.
Nice.
Okay.
That my sister gave me, saying they couldn't get it to stay on, and you know, kept shutting down. They even took it into this one place. Well, we don't see anything wrong with it.
All right.
I said, okay. She goes, if you can get it running, you can have it.
Oh,
okay. No
right.
problem.
Challenge so, accepted.
Went into the timeouts for the display, turned it to never.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Oh, no.
That's amusing.
So I've
16 gig, or 16 meg of memory, 1 gig hard drive, and a nice
It better be 16 gig of...
I hope so.
13-inch, 32-inch...
32-inch display for an
yes,
all-in-one? That thing is giant.
Nice. All-in-one, nice speaker bar built right in.
Wow.
All I had to do is check that one.
So I've been trying out Linux Mint.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people like it.
And I put it on an older laptop, and then I've got it monitoring my 3D printer and making my 3D printer available on my network so that I don't have to go down to the basement where my printer lives to send
right.
files to it to go and get them started.
You got a camera on it, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And the camera's built into the laptop, of course.
Yeah, of course
right.
it is.
So I just make sure to point it at the right place. It turns out to be a really elegant solution, and I know that it's protected because it can still install all the updates.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And that's the big thing. Once you lose the ability to store updates, that machine should be taken off any network it's on.
Yeah.
Or moved to an operating system that still has updates.
Right.
Going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. I can't do the headbanging thing anymore because of the arthritis in my neck, so it's the finger now.
Just the finger wag.
The finger wag. All right. Apple has been accused of underreporting the prevalence of child sexual abuse material, or CSAM, on its platforms. The National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children, a child protection charity in the UK, says that Apple reported just 267 worldwide cases of suspected CSAM to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children last year. That pales in comparison to the 1.47 million potential cases that Google reported, 30.6 million reported from Meta, other platforms that reported more potential CSAM cases than Apple in 2023, include TikTok, X, Snapchat, Xbox, and PlayStation. Every U.S.-based tech company is required to pass along any possible CSAM cases detected on their platforms to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, which directs cases to relevant law enforcement agencies worldwide. The National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children also said Apple was implicated in more CSAM cases in just England and Wales between April 2022 and March 2023 than it reported worldwide in that year. The charity used freedom of information requests to gather these data from police forces. Google services such as iMessage, FaceTime, and iCloud all have end-to-end encryption, which stops the company from viewing the contents of what users share on them. However, WhatsApp also has end-to-end encryption, and that service reported nearly 1.4 million cases of suspected CSAM in 2023. In 2021, Apple announced plans to deploy a system that would scan images before they were uploaded to iCloud and compare them against a database of known CSAM images. But following a backlash from privacy and digital rights advocates, Apple delayed the rollout of its CSAM detection tools before ultimately killing the project in 2022. Apple declined to comment on the accusation, instead pointing to a statement it made when it shelved the CSAM scanning plan. Apple said it opted for a different strategy that, and I quote, prioritize the security and privacy of its users. So how do you feel about that? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415.
That's one of those answers that produces more questions than it answers.
Yes.
So, what do you mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it produces a lot of follow-up questions in my head.
I'm a big believer in privacy.
Sure.
But I am a bigger believer in protecting children.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry. That's the order for me.
Right. Right. I'm the same way.
Yeah. So if protecting children means a little less privacy, I don't have as much problem with that as I probably
down
should.
With it. I'm totally down with that. And I, you know, I've fought, you know, I've testified. I think it's three cases. Yeah, three cases totally of, you know, against child porn. Where people have been caught with the child porn on their machines.
Yeah, so have I.
And it's like, you know what? And I'll do that. I don't care if you're my brother or sister. If you, I find it on your machine, boom, it's going to be. Because one story I used to tell is I had a client one time come in and tell me, all right, yeah, you know, it's acting funny and all this other stuff, but don't look at any of my pictures.
No.
What you just did, what they didn't realize, is by them making that statement,
it becomes mandatory.
And my office manager was standing right there, and she's in awe. And, what? I says, no. I says, I'm going to tell you right now. I have to now that you mentioned that.
Right.
But I don't want people to look at my picture. I said, ma'am, if a machine comes in here and it's got porn on it and I let it go, I'm just as guilty as you, and I can go to jail for that. Now, if you didn't say anything, I'm not going to go looking for it. We don't purposely go looking for it. But the minute you come in and tell me, don't look at my pictures, I have to. And it's not to be funny or anything else. By law, if that machine went out and it had child porn on it, because we did have three of them come in with porn on it, we happened to catch it, and we called the state police because of where we were. We had to call the state police, and we had their number on a card. And they'd come right in, and they'd tape up the machine and everything else and take it away.
In one of the places I worked, and I won't say which one, I had two gentlemen come into my office, suits, sunglasses.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They were carrying guns.
Uh-huh.
And they weren't from a movie set.
And they said, we understand you're the guy to talk to about breaking into people's computers here at this company. I said, who are you? And they showed me FBI badges.
Uh-huh.
I said, yes, sir. Yes, sirs. I'm whatever you need. Yes, sirs.
What can I do for you?
And we checked two or three computers at that company for the...
offense?
And what's interesting is... one of the computers had a lot of porn on it, but it was legal porn.
Okay.
It was adults doing adult things to adults.
That's perfectly seen.
And consensual things.
And so we just bypassed that computer.
Okay.
That's fine.
That's not what they're looking for.
They got in trouble with the company
for
that.
Well, that's a different,
but not with the FBI.
Not with the federal
given the
government.
Choice. Yep. Yeah. We did, however, on one other machine, find child pornography. And, you know, they said, we need a copy of all of these data. So I took one of my spare hard drives out, copied all the data onto it, handed it to them and said, I don't want this in my office.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want this in this building. I want you to take this away with you. Take it away.
And report that you took it away.
And you guys know that I only downloaded this stuff on your orders.
Right.
He said, you're on our side. I said, okay. That's the important part of this. Thank you very much.
Well, the very first time, matter of fact, it was my technician, Wally, found a child porn on the machine. We called the sheriff's department. They came over. And he had to be a rookie.
Because
what I'm about to tell you really did happen. We called him in, and we said, all right, we found this porn on there. And, you know, showed it to him. And he turns to us and says, how do I know you didn't put it on there? I says, excuse me? Well, you could have put it on there, and you're trying to get back at him. I says, and I would call the sheriff? He goes, well, there's nothing I can do about it. I says, okay, no problem. So I happened to have a friend at the time on Brighton Police. I called him up. He says, here's the guy you want to get involved with. He's with the FBI, and give him a call. He's going to be your best friend because you're going to run into this. So I did, and sure enough, they came down where the strip mall, where my shop was. There was like six cop cars there.
Oh, boy.
And they're all wondering, you know, because they're coming into NYPC, wondering, what's going on? Everybody, you know, coming out of their offices all the way down wondering.
Waiting for the perp walk.
Yeah, something waiting to see me come out in handcuffs or something. And then they just see me helping them carry out this PC that we had to put this disk drive in, a blank disk drive, put that in there, tape it. I had to sign it.
Yep.
That this is the way it was. I had to put tape on the back so they couldn't power it up, sign that. And, oh, yeah. And, yeah.
All of that happened to me, too, when they took that drive away with the extra stuff. They came back in my office with the computer and said, do all this. Did all the same thing. And I did that three or four other times for them as well. It was
amazing.
I got to be friends with those guys.
They were nice. I'm thankful I have not run into this situation.
It is not a good...
But it's nice to know that there's professionals that can help you navigate.
The problem, of course, is I knew the person.
Sure.
Whose computer that was, because they worked in the same company I did.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you said hello to them in the hallway.
That was hard.
Right. Or at the vending machine. Or,
right.
Yeah.
We'd been out having drinks the night before with a bunch of us.
Mm.
They were there. It was... And again, like I said, I don't care regular porn, adult porn. I don't care.
Oh, I had a guy.
I don't care. But child porn, no thank you very much.
Was into Amazon women, you know, very tall.
Oh, sure.
And he was a short guy. And he had
people that work at warehouses?
He had over 3/4 of his hard drive full of this stuff.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with that. Like you said, it was totally legal, and that was his fetish, and, you know, God love you. You just do your own thing. And
that's right. No shame for that. I don't care. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from...
Hold on a minute.
We lost Fred.
One more thing. Fred, come back.
Fred?
We need you.
Okay, I'll try it again.
All right.
We're going to try it again.
He's pressing the magic buttons.
Dave is trying to press 4 buttons.
Yes.
5 buttons.
If you ever see Dave, he's
six
really like
buttons.
It's like a DJ. It's like an octopus. He's got buttons.
Six buttons and a slider.
There you go.
All right.
We're back.
Now?
Fred, are you there?
I am here.
Hey,
the miracles of technology.
Fred.
What's up?
Well, I got a couple questions. Usually when I listen to your program, I end up with more questions than... I was going to ask about a particular software that was included as an add-on, and I thought I'd just give it a try. A while ago, you had a caller talk about a tweaked program to bring the windows back to the right click back to the Windows 10 version.
Okay.
And that worked perfectly.
Oh, that's good.
I've since found that, you know, if you don't have that, you can do a shift and a right click. But in with that, there was a program called PC Repair by Outbyte.
Okay.
And I'm looking at it, and it's like I'm not terribly impressed. But is it any good? Any recommendations? Keep it. Don't keep it.
What's it supposed to be doing?
It's PC Repair. It does the scan of the system. It's got a bunch of different things that I haven't really engaged in using. But one of the things that's a little bit annoying is it keeps popping up.
Right.
And the only way to get it to go away for that session is to use the task.
Sure. And the task.
Yeah.
Well, I will say, this is not a title that I've heard of before.
No. Me either.
Me neither.
And the fact that it was kind of hitching a ride along with this other tool on the installer doesn't really bode well.
Yeah, it doesn't tote very well.
It's not
well,
exactly
yeah.
a vote for it.
Right.
In general, when it comes to things that scan your PC to give you information about it, there sure are a lot of those out there. And I would say, unless there's specific things that you want to know about your PC that this tool is providing you, then I don't see a major reason to keep it on the machine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because if it's a Windows-based machine, for the most part, NTFS does a good job of self-maintenance. So if you have other programs like a virus program, super anti-spyware, and malware bytes, you got yourself pretty well covered. That, you know, you're not going to have, like the old days with Windows, all those temp files building up and all this other crux, Nick would always say, building up and, you know, clogging and slowing down your machine. What we do also recommend, if you want to keep your machine running at optimum, is to turn around and use a program like Revo Uninstaller. If you use that to uninstall programs, it'll keep your machine running a lot faster than if you use the Windows Uninstaller.
So the malware bytes, and what were the other two that you had mentioned?
Super anti-spyware and an antivirus program.
Like Avast?
Yeah,
Avast. Sure.
Yeah.
I have Avast on my phone, a paid version. I have the paid version of the Revo Uninstaller.
Okay.
This PC Repair has a good looking interface.
Okay.
You know, I don't. I just wondered before I pull a trigger on either telling it to scan now or to Revo Uninstall it. I thought I'd ask you guys to see what your opinion was on it. It's on a window machine. The only thing I use this window machine for is my work stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. I would stick with the three we mentioned earlier and not use that.
Sounds like a plan.
Yep.
Second question.
Yeah.
Now, I've been hearing a lot about Linux Mint. And as I've said before, I've installed Ubuntu 24.04.
Okay.
And it's I'm just looking for your opinion on either one of those, if you've looked at those.
I've installed both. No, I haven't installed Ubuntu recently. In general, I've found that both, at least for the standard machines, the kind of the laptops, the all-in-one style machines where everything is on the main logic board. I don't have a lot of fancy video cards. I don't have a lot of fancy drives or peripherals. I just have kind of standard HP laser printers and
plain vanilla.
Just pretty vanilla setups, nothing exciting. I've found that both of those detect all of the pieces inside my computer, so they make sure that the Wi-Fi works, and they make sure that the Bluetooth works, and they make sure that I can get print to my printers. And in general, I think both of those are very useful. I suspect there are probably more apps available for Ubuntu, but I think isn't Mint a variant?
Well, that's the thing. Linux Mint is based on Ubuntu.
Okay.
What you're really getting are two different things. First is the user interface is specific to Mint. They use, well, no, it's not. You can get it for anything, but it's Cinnamon is the main desktop, and then there's another one, Mate.
Okay.
Both of those are available in Linux Mint. And the other thing about Linux Mint is it has a slightly different mix of software.
Pre-installed.
Okay.
Again, nothing. You can set up either machine to look exactly like the other machine. Each one just gives you a different base set to start from. A lot of people like Linux Mint because it closer mimics what Windows looks like. So if they've moved from Windows, it's a slightly easier transition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, this is my first Linux go around, and when I did a Google search, I just searched for the newest version.
Sure.
And that was the one that came up, because it is just this year. And I have no problem transitioning from a Windows environment to that, because it's like you've used the analogy of driving a car.
Yep.
Yeah, the radio is on the different side, or the tuning knob is on the left instead of the right, or vice versa.
Right.
I don't see any reason, but in hearing so much about it, I thought, well, I'd ask.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. No, the Linux Mint, the two nice things. No, there's a third thing. Nobody expects Spanish transition.
Off by one error.
Off by one error. They're both based off Ubuntu. Although what Mint gives you is the Cinnamon or Mate interfaces and a slightly different mix of software. The other thing Mint gives you is that there are a lot of multimedia codecs for example, playing a DVD.
Okay.
That are not 100% free. So in Ubuntu, you have to install them yourself.
Okay.
Whereas Mint installs them for you.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I haven't played a CD in quite some time.
Right.
Yes. But that's just an example. There's some other audio and video things. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to. Most of the stuff that I listen to is on your station.
Mm-hmm. That's what we like to hear.
Or Pandora, so you know, it's just a mix of those two, and I haven't printed on paper in years.
Okay,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
good. The trees, thank you.
The trees, thank you. But both Ubuntu, the newer Ubuntu's, and by newer I'm talking 10 years. So what do I know? The newer Ubuntu's and Mint, all auto find networked printers.
Okay.
Or locally attached printers.
Right.
Okay.
So, for example, I recently just set up a laptop, and the second thing I did was go to install a printer.
Mm-hmm.
It was already there.
It was already there, yeah. That's
all
what
I had
noticed.
To say was, okay, you're the default. Thank you.
Well, we found this printer. You want to print to that? And I said, yeah, that would be nice.
That's okay.
Let's do that.
Since that's my printer, yes.
So I don't think you can go wrong with either one.
Yeah, now it's just what you like as a front end and what you like in the mix of software, and most of that's pretty subtle.
And the beauty part is you can make an installer on a USB key and tell your computer to boot from that key, and without blowing away anything on your main drive, you can run it from the key.
Okay.
It won't be as full speed as it would be from your main drive, but it'll be close. And see which one works a little better for you. And
I had two devices. Both had Windows 11. They were both refurbished. They were both bought from Woot.
Okay.
And I decided just to, rather than mess around, I was done with Windows, at least on anything that I wanted to use. And I just did a complete install. Wiped out the hard drive.
Nice.
And it was easy. It was so easy. I used the same thumb drive on all the devices.
Yep.
And I eventually did one for my daughter, so she, you know, gave her a decent laptop for not much money.
Yep.
And she's loving it. So, and she's only, well, she's used Windows and Mac. She has a, her boss has a Mac at work, and so she's used to both those environments, but she has not said anything, any problem with transitioning to the Linux environment.
Plus, she's got you for support.
Well, yeah. She's also, she's never asked me a question, so I mean, it's...
That says a lot for the operating system and the way that you set it up for.
And it says a lot for your daughter, too.
Yeah, she's not afraid to try stuff out, so...
Good for her.
You know, we've had the conversation before, I said, well, you know, way back when the first machine we had was a Windows 95... and, you know, she would worry about, well, what if I do something wrong? I said, well, back then we had this stack of disks. And I said, well, we just wipe it out and start over again.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's even easier now. I've told her, you know, whatever happens, we've got this flash drive and we can start all over again.
It's true.
Yeah, and the other main advantage that we've been telling folks is, you can do, like you said, you can buy a bunch of flash drives and put different flavors of Linux on them, plug it in, and do a test drive. It'll run a little bit slower, but you can see the layout before actually installing it. And, you know, that way you're not committed to it. And, yeah, no, let's try this one. Shut it down, put this other one in.
That does, that, you know, that is definitely a viable option. But what I've done is, I picked one. It's fine. Mm-hmm. I don't need to look at it anymore and drive myself crazier than I already am.
Yep. But for everybody else listening, you can throw it on a thumb drive and run it. The thing you have to remember is that it's compressed on that thumb drive. So loading files is going to be much slower than it would be off the hard drive because it has to decompress them. But other than that, it will run the same.
I totally agree with that, and it's just my matter of once I've got it up and working, and the Ubuntu had LibreOffice already installed.
Yep.
And I use LibreOffice everywhere. I use LibreOffice on a Windows machine as well.
Yep.
It just works perfectly. My Money Dance worked on all the machines.
Yep.
And NPass worked on all the machines, and I'm like, well, I don't need to try anything else on.
No, you're absolutely right. Once you're set, you're happy. All right. Thanks, Brad. We appreciate that.
All right, have a good one.
You too. Keep smiling. All right, that music tells us that the first hour of this show is history. But don't despair, because you can make history for yourself, because there's a whole other hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright. Thankfully, a whole nother hour of Dennis Worcester. A whole nother hour of Nick Francesco. And a whole nother hour of you. Give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. And we will be back with more sound bites. Take a quick bio break. Get yourself a beverage of whatever sort makes you happy. But don't forget to come back, because we're going to be doing your calls. We're going to be doing more news, and we're going to be doing whatever it is we do on this channel in just a few minutes. We'll see you on the other side.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 50 years on the air in Rochester.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
What?
Yep, still.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we, collectively, are sound bites.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Before I forget, again, there will be no Sound Bites Lounge tomorrow night. I have my wife's, I believe, every single human she's related to.
Okay.
It's coming to our house.
Wow.
Tomorrow, it's very unlikely that I will be able to break away and do this.
I was just saying, you might want to escape.
Maybe you need, maybe you need the excuse. Oh, sorry. I must be going.
Yeah. So it'll be nice. Well, they all live in like Florida and Kentucky and Arizona. So
wow.
We see them once a year. I can deal with
and
that.
They descend upon your
None
home.
None of them are listening. Yeah. It's going to be fun, but it means that I won't be able to do the.
They can do
Have they all been instructed to bring their regional delicacy to your house so that you can partake of all the different pieces from around our great nation?
Yeah. Our house is no stranger to this. For years, we had a Halloween party.
You used to have the picnic, too.
And we had the nearly annual Labor Day Drink-a-thon and talent show every year, nearly at Labor Day.
Okay.
And
Labor Day-ish, yeah.
Labor Day-ish. And then during the big, when was the big blackout? 80-something. Well, forget what year, but
yeah.
86, 88, somewhere.
Depends
in there.
How much of the drinking happens, I guess.
Yeah. We were the only house for like a mile around that still had electricity. And to this day, we don't know why. And it was dead winter, of course.
Oh, okay. Yes, of course.
Our power lines were frozen into our pond. They had fallen down, but they were still working.
Yeah.
So we had every neighbor in town say, can we stay at your place?
And your fish had never been warmer.
Fish had never been warmer. And the turtle. So, yeah, we're no strangers to a house full of people.
Okay.
It's not a problem.
It's Casa de Francesco is the place to be.
That's exactly right.
B&B.
Exactly right. But here, we're no stranger to your calls. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. What a segue. Toll-free 800-790-0415, and we're talking to Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Hello, how are you today?
Hello.
Peachy, how are you?
I'm great. The gentleman that mentioned about bringing the right-click back to the Windows 11 operating system, I was the one that had suggested that program a while back.
That's
Win Arrow Tweaker.
Win Arrow Tweaker.
Nice.
Yeah. Now, a lot of places host this particular software.
Okay.
But you really need to get it from their site, you know, because download.com and a lot of places, they add the snagware in there.
Yeah, that's true. They do that, and they make it really tough to find the download button on their stupid webpage, too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and because mine never had any extra software in it. To, you know, to even worry about. There was nothing to, you know, opt in or opt out of.
Okay.
But it's an excellent program. It's very powerful. It does a lot more than that. If you can go in and you can add things back from Windows 7. You can, oh, geez, it's just so much you can't even mention all the things it can do. And all of it's reversible by unclicking.
Amazing.
And very rarely do you have to restart. There's a few things that need restarts because it has to put a registry entry in sometimes.
Okay.
You know, it creates its own, but then again, you uncheck it, and you restart the machine, and it takes the registry entry away that it created.
You know, there are a whole... I'm Googling for WinArrow right now. There's a WinArrow.com. There's a WinArrowTweaker.com. It seems like this might be an app that lots of different... websites are want to get in front of me and the download. Is there a specific place that you know is a super duper official?
I'm not mistaken, I got it from winarrowtweaker.com.
Okay, I see that one here.
Yeah.
I'll make sure to try that one next. That one
it's
looks
been,
more
it's been
official.
A while.
That one looks more legitimate than the other ones I saw that seemed to have a bunch of other ads and other things on it.
Yeah.
That were all keyword positioned to look perform well. Okay, that's great to know.
I am in the process of trying to put that on our link page.
Okay, so we'll make sure that other people know about it.
I think Steve did it quite a while ago.
Yeah, I looked for it. It didn't come up.
And it looks like it's donationware.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay, well, hey, thanks for teaching me something new.
Yeah, it's great. If you want to customize Windows, you know, you can even put your own graphic in your about, you know, the old about window.
Yeah.
You know, you can put, you know, even if the company that made the computer didn't put their information in there, you could put it in for them.
Okay.
You know, their website, their tech support line. You can do all that in there, plus tons of other things. It's a lot of fun.
Interesting. Okay, cool.
So, all right, guys.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
You got it. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
That's one of the things I love about being here on the show is that I always pick up at least two or three new things every time I'm here.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
And this is a great example of that.
You too. It's what we're here for, and that's now on our homepage, by the way, WinAero Tweaker. So, yeah. We are live on YouTube. I don't know where else we're live, but we are live on YouTube.
Oh, we're all over the place.
We're everywhere. Everywhere where books are sold.
That's right.
So you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. And you know what? We'll talk to you just like we're going to talk to Don from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Don?
Hello. Getting back to your discussion about antivirus software, am I correct in that Defender comes with Microsoft Windows 10, 11, or whatever?
Yes.
And when you then put on another program, such as AVG or Avast, does that automatically defeat the operation of Defender?
No, they will both be running simultaneously. You need to shut one or the other off.
Is there a problem in both running simultaneously?
Sometimes they flag each other as a virus.
They say, each one will say, hey, there's this other tool over there that keeps scanning lots and lots of files on your computer. Isn't that strange?
Yeah.
Don't you want to do something about that?
And, of course, they do take up more cycles on your system that way. Although, with most modern system, who cares?
It's not a big deal.
Right.
I would say the other thing they do is they age your storage a little more. If they're scanning over each individual file on the disk, your storage, especially modern solid-state storage, is designed to handle a limited number of reads and writes before its performance degrades. So that's another potential angle that would make them less desirable to have running simultaneously.
Generally speaking, you only need one antivirus program running.
Well, I have AVG on the computer now, and it's never indicated that there is another program running. So how would I go in to find Defender? And again, what is your recommendation? Which one is better?
Better is a relative term. People like Defender for the fact that it, how do I put this best? Because it comes from Microsoft, they feel that it integrates better with the operating system.
Even though they don't update it as much as the others.
But the con is they don't update it as often as something like AVG updates. So, given the choice, I personally would prefer that you not use Defender, but that's your choice. So, if I were you, I would go in and turn it off.
Yeah, Defender's better than nothing, but usually a third-party tool has advantages that Microsoft isn't ready to commit to.
Well, it's not their full purpose. You know, they don't make anything off of it. It's just another service that now they've got to devote some other employees to do that list, to build it into the code, and they don't gain any more dollars out of that. So you know, there's no incentive to really update it.
Third-party tools might be, developers might be more motivated to,
okay,
to keep things up to date.
A dumb question.
This is the place for that.
How do I find Defender to defeat it? Go into Simply Programs, install?
You can do a search down in the lower left-hand corner there. Just type in Defender, and it'll open up this window that opens up all the security for your Windows products, like your firewall and antivirus programs and all that.
Okay. Now, you mentioned a while ago, and I didn't have a chance to write it down, you talked about three programs.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those, I think, was it Bitfinder or...
A gentleman was using Bitfinder, and we were telling them
Bitdefender.
Bitdefender that, you know, they're okay, but we recommend, because with Windows, starting with Windows actually 7, they went to NTFS, and it's a far more efficient file system. So back, unlike the old days of Windows 3 and Windows 5 and all that, you don't get all the other, you know, oh, I got to defrag the hard drive and all this other stuff. It runs pretty efficient. So what we recommended to them was to get Super Anti-Spyware, Malwarebytes, and a virus program, and Revo Uninstaller.
Okay, Super Antivirus?
Super Anti-Spyware.
Oh, Anti-Spyware, okay.
Malwarebytes.
Okay, and those don't conflict, right?
Nope.
They work together.
Uh-huh.
One goes deep, one goes wide.
Okay, and what's the third one?
Virus flavor of your choice.
Antivirus flavor.
Yeah, whether it's AVG or Avast.
Mm-hmm. Do you, I guess I'll ask you the same sensitive question. Do you have a preference for AVG or Avast?
No.
Not really.
Okay.
They both do the same, as long as the key thing is, which we've said, is that you're running all three. Even though viruses aren't prevalent as much as they used to be back in the 70s and 80s, they are still out there, and they could bite you.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to run, you know, an antivirus program.
What's the difference between Super Anti-Spyware and programs such as AVG?
AVG is an antivirus program. Super Anti-Spyware is an anti-spyware program.
Oh. Spyware and malware.
They do two different things.
Yep. And they're looking for different types of specifics.
Ways to take over your machine.
And Malwarebytes comes in as what, belt and suspenders approach to?
Well, no, they do two different things. Spyware is something that sits on your machine and attempts. They overlap significantly, okay?
Yep.
But spyware specifically is looking for stuff to steal. Viruses are often looking for stuff to break.
Okay. And how about Trojans? Do any of these take care of those?
Again, those are ways that viruses and spyware get on your machine.
Mm. And replicate,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen. Again, I appreciate the information, and keep up the good work.
Yeah, and by the way, before you hang up, if you go over to the securitytango.com and go into the Windows Waltz, if you look at step 2, download all necessary files, you'll find links to Super Anti-Spyware, Malwarebytes, and whatever antivirus program you like.
SecurityTango.com is a website that Nick developed years ago to help people maintain and protect their computer. And it will have a list of the types of software that we talked about today.
Okay, and in Security Tango, I check what Windows did you say?
Yeah, under across the near the top, there's a set of menus. One choice of which is Let's Dance. If you click on that, you can download. You can go to the Windows Waltz, and that's the page you want for Windows. And there's another page for Linux and Android and the Mac and the iPhone.
Perfect. Thank you again. Much appreciated.
Sure. Thank you. And I see on that page that that site's been up for over 20 years.
Oh, my goodness. With your, is this
golly,
PHP that you used for that? Or was it still Perl? Or what did you use to build this?
I think I did hand-coded assembly the first time. No, it's always been HTML.
Uh-huh.
They're not heavy.
Lovingly hand-coded.
Lovingly hand-coded.
Bespoke, artisanal.
Because I do not use WordPress. Thank you very much.
Made from 100% recycled electrons.
Electronics. No, dolphin-free, by the way.
That's right. A lot of people don't know.
Certified. Dolphin-free.
Guaranteed.
Guaranteed dolphin-free.
And no fat.
And no fat. And you will find a link to that also on the Soundbites webpage under some important links. So you can dance the security tango there, and you can even buy a t-shirt.
That's right.
If you like.
If you view it on your phone that has an OLED, it's even organic to look at that.
Right.
Look at that website.
All right, back to the phones. It's Fred again, still in Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know that on May 4th you had that posted.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I found it on May 4th.
Okay.
Since Dave put me through, I guess I'll ask a question.
All right.
If I have Malwarebytes on my phone, do you know if I can combine that subscription with my PC?
Oh, good question.
That's an excellent question.
Let's find out.
Malwarebytes.
Nick is going to the keyboard.
I don't know how many machines you can download. It is a free program.
Okay.
Yeah. If you pay for it.
What do you get?
If you do the personal pricing.
He's looking through. He's scrolling.
It's one machine, it looks like.
Okay.
So, okay. Yeah.
Do they offer a combo discount if you get more than one thing?
Oh, there's a family
rate. Pack.
Okay, so that's for multiple computers or multiple people?
Yeah, it doesn't say how many. It does say family.
Okay.
But it doesn't say how many people are... 10 devices. There it is. Right there in front of my face.
All right.
So if you pay for the family version, you put it on to $10. $10 a month. They bill it annually, so that's, what, $120? If my math is anywhere near correct.
Sounds about right.
Sounds about, okay. Backstop.
Close enough.
30 cents a day.
But that's 10 devices. So you can put it on your whole family's desktops and phones and tablets.
Okay. Yeah. And that covers phones and
it covers pretty much anything. Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't see anything that says that they have to be in the same household.
It does not say that.
Is it an honor thing?
10 family members.
Okay.
I have 3 devices, and the one that I talked about earlier, my daughter has. I would.
Yeah.
I will accept that she is family.
Yeah, seems that way.
Yeah.
If she's your daughter and all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So go for it.
I think that'll fly.
But consult your legal advice provider.
Right. Yeah. No, I think family. I think that fits. 10 devices.
Yeah. I don't see any caveats on the household like.
Right. Right. Like Netflix does or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah. 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 Yeah.
So that might
go for it, Fred.
That sounds like a plan. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Right. Yeah, protecting all of your devices is very important. You know, we talk a lot about protecting your computer,
true,
but you have a phone. You have a tablet.
Yeah.
You may have a watch. You may have a smart speaker. You know, you've got a lot of devices. Many of them are pre-protected, but a lot of the smart devices you can buy from your home, particularly the more inexpensive ones,
mm-hmm,
are wide open.
Yeah,
and we've seen numerous points where people got into a network through a smart device.
Oh yeah,
like a smart light bulb.
Light bulbs are the most common. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a guy on YouTube that pulls out his network analyzer and he looks at the information that goes across the network. It's called a packet trace, and he looks at the the conversations that are happening. And naturally, a smart light bulb needs to be able to talk to the network in order to receive information about what should it do next. Should it go to half brightness? Should it go to full brightness? Should it turn off? Should it turn on? If it's a color bulb, should it? How much red and green and blue should it be showing? But sometimes those bulbs also talk back to places, and it may not be to places you were expecting them to.
Right. In addition, a lot of printers have their own web server.
Yes, it's true. I was working on one yesterday.
And many of them are just simply wide open to the network.
Yeah.
And a good entry point for the bad guys.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the bad guys. They have I wouldn't say they're bad guys, but they are curious people who like to see how things work, and sometimes like to try and make things work in ways that the manufacturer might not have anticipated. Let's say that. So they go have a.
You clearly work in an educational institution.
They have this get together they have every year. I think it's in Vegas, called DEF CON.
Yep.
And one of the presentations, they record a lot of them, put them on YouTube, and that's where I watch them. One of them was about a guy who took a HP. They called it an MFP, so it's a printer and a fax machine, right, and a copier. And he was able to break into the computer that was connected to the printer by going through the fax line,
yep,
and executing some code inside the printer that made it behave in a way it was not intended to. And then he was able to talk back through the USB port and talk to the computer, and then make the computer do something it was not expected to do. So all of that's amazing. Of course, this all comes on the week after the weekend that I spent cleaning up, and my team at where I work spent cleaning up CrowdStrike.
Oh,
and the considerable number of machines
I
that required
when I read that.
A personal visit in order to clean them up.
I still got two machines that are messed up. They're rebooting, you know, 4 or 5 times during the day and downloading the image from corporate, because then it gets all confused.
Right.
And it's like, you know, some of these older machines, they don't like being disrupted like this.
So every once in a while, the software that you want in order to prevent you from having bad things happen itself causes the bad things to happen.
Right. And we were talking about that at least last week. One of the things I was saying was, you know, so many things you can do from a console now.
True.
Click, 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 click.
Yes.
And so you don't need a lot of people for a 1,000-person company.
True.
But when it's something like CrowdStrike and you have to visit each individual machine, and each one can take up to an hour to fix,
mm-hmm,
you don't have enough people. I don't care how many you got.
Yeah. It took us several days to do that. And it happened, started out on a Friday. And on
Friday night,
we went around to look at all the folks, and most of them had taken their laptops and were working from home that Friday in the summertime.
Sure, of course they were.
Where I work, anyway. And so it wasn't until Monday, when all of the support tickets started piling in, that we realized, this is why Friday seemed way, way too easy.
Yep.
Yeah.
But big shout out to my team. They were able to rectify dozens and dozens and dozens of individual machines, and they did a perfect job.
And when you've got a good team, life is easy.
No doubt. I am blessed with a very competent and professional and friendly team that we could not do anything near as well.
Shout out to Dennis's team, people.
Yeah.
Take a bow. All right, we've got less than a minute to go, but we can at least talk to a little bit about JD from Altoona. What's up?
So I've got three things. The first one I'm going to throw at you is a Dave's Garage on YouTube. He's a former Microsoft programmer.
Okay.
And he has awesome insights into the Windows kernel and the way a bunch of stuff is, because he's responsible for a lot of the different things that are still in the code even today. He joined with the joined the NT team, pulling user interface components from Windows 95 and integrating them into NT4.
Very good.
All right, hang on the line, JD. We have to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, JD from Altoona, PA, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, that's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that with your generous support, we continue to be member-supported. Jazz 90.1. See you in just a few.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have J.D. from Altoona, PA, all the way down in Altoona, PA on the line. How are things down in Altoona, J.D.?
Weather's not too bad for the moment, but apparently my internet's starting to go out. So if
the
phone call dropped, I apologize.
No, that's it.
We understand.
We'll assume you didn't hang up on us in disgust.
Fair enough. So the other things I wanted to bring up was, one, I finally found an active AI use out in the field that actually seems to be somebody has their head on straight.
Okay.
I was looking for some stuff at one of the big box stores a while ago,
mm-hmm.
and ended up getting the manager involved because the website said they had 7 units in stock and couldn't find them anywhere. And that seems like an awful large number of very big parts to go missing due to shrink.
Okay.
Right.
So got the manager involved, and they started scanning the overhead with their phone, and I'm like, what's going on? And she says, well, every so often, the employees are required to go through their section and take pictures of the overhead. Just rapidly snap pictures of everything up there. Well, apparently, they run it through AI, which then identifies from the codes that are there what's actually up there and where in the store it actually is located.
Oh, interesting. So they can crowdsource all of that.
From their employees, yeah. And then all they have to do is they have access to it. We don't as customers. But they can search for something and say, okay, we can't find it in the store. Does the system know where it is in the overhead? And within 30 seconds of doing that search, they found them.
Nice.
Interesting.
And I've been there for an hour looking.
Really nice. That's an excellent use.
That's pretty clever.
So between image recognition and AI, they were able to, like I said, I think that's probably the first use of machine learning I've heard of where it's an actual useful function.
That's
yep,
good.
Yep, yep.
And
nice.
We should be keeping track of ways that the technology is actually getting useful stuff done.
Because there are a few of them.
It won't take as long.
Right.
I'm not saying there aren't others out there. It's just the first I've heard of.
Right.
Right.
Very good.
So the last thing I have is I'm in the middle of building a new Ryzen 9 system. Well, I was right up until AMD delayed the launch of the new processors. But with the new system, I have a question that I'm going to need answered before I start installing everything.
Yeah.
I was planning to use Ubuntu as a hypervisor OS and running everything that I do on top of that.
Okay.
Do you know a better distro that would be better for that purpose?
Oh, excellent question.
This feels like a Proxmox situation.
Yeah.
And I'll take the rest of the call offline because
okay.
there's noise going on here. But thanks for everything you do, guys, and take care.
That's good. Thank you so much for
Thank
calling.
Thank you.
That'll give us just a few extra seconds to think of.
There are...
All right, so I'll pad for a little bit and bring all of our listeners up to speed with what
Please.
He was talking about. When your computer starts up, most people have their computer immediately launch into an operating system, whether that's Microsoft Windows, or if you're an Apple user, you'd be using Mac OS. Or if you're a Linux user, it might be Ubuntu or Arch or Debian or some other variant of Linux. And one of the things that we are used to is that the computer is running one operating system. It's whatever your computer happened to come with or whatever you've elected to install. There are ways to make your computer behave like more than one computer. Those are that concept is called a virtual machine, where you have your computer's hardware, the CPU, the RAM, the network, the storage, and you have more than one operating system running at once. The computer is smart enough and fast enough to be able to trade its attention between more than one operating system at a time. And some people like this because it allows them to test different features of different versions or discover or explore different operating systems without committing full time. it also makes it so that you can have different services run simultaneously. So if you have a web server that runs really nicely on Linux running your website, you can then have a separate instance of Microsoft Windows for doing your day-to-day tasks with Microsoft Office or other tools that you might deem useful. The downside is you don't get the full performance that you would if only one operating system is happening, but you need a tool called a hypervisor to keep track of all of those various virtual machines and which ones are running, which ones are not, and which ones need this amount of computing power and which ones you want to dedicate more to and which ones not as much to. So with all of that padding in place, Nick,
yes,
this person that wants to potentially run multiple operating systems and hypervisors, there used to be the big player was VMware that would make virtual machines and the software that it would take to run multiple machines on one piece of hardware. They got bought by private equity.
Yep.
And promptly said, hey, we're getting rid of our free tier of stuff, and we really only want to keep the top 10% of profit-making clients that right. don't make a lot of support tickets.
Right.
And that made a giant vacuum for other tools to rush in for
and
the home
user.
And they have.
So I've just actually put a link up to a link to 10, count them 10, of
10.
The hypervisor technologies. Zen, X-E-N, is one of the big open source ones.
Okay.
Linux KVM, which is kernel...
Keyboard video mouse?
No, in this case it stands for kernel something monitor. I forget what the V stands for.
Okay.
Probably it'll say here.
Virtualization?
Kernel-based virtual machine.
Oh, okay.
Microsoft has their Hyper-V. VMware still has the free EXSI, I believe.
Yes.
I think so. There's one called Elgest, which is actually built into the new Linux kernel.
Right. Yeah, that's right. VMware got rid of VMware Player, I think was their
right,
free
right,
tier
right.
that they got rid of.
Oracle has VirtualBox.
Yes.
So you run an operating system, you then run VirtualBox, and then you run something inside it. And then there's XVisor, and of course, like you said, VMware Workstation, if you can find a copy, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And OpenVZ, and then there's a an open source hypervisor called SmartOS, which is based on actual Unix,
okay,
Open Solaris, rather than Linux.
Okay,
but all of those are available.
Did Proxmox make that list? I presume that's what it
did
was
not.
For as well. Okay.
Apparently, these people do not consider it one of the top 10. I don't know why. But that's a list of some of the ones that you can use, and by adding one of those, you can then put whatever operating system you want on your machine and run multiple. As long as you have enough RAM, you can run multiple versions simultaneously.
Right. Yeah. Usually, RAM and storage tend to be the biggest resources that you have to worry about. Processing generally has enough headroom that you can dedicate a certain number of cores
yeah.
from your CPU.
The big difference between running it on an individual machine and running it on a specifically purchased virtualization device,
yeah.
like VMware sells,
right.
is that, for example, when I was at RIT, we had one that had 24 cores
mm-hmm.
and, I forget, 48 gig of RAM and
yeah.
multi-terabytes of data. And you could go into the console and, you know, for example, one of my faculty came and said, well, I've got this giant data set
mm-hmm.
that I want to run, and it says it'll take 2 weeks to run.
Right.
I said, well, if you run it over a weekend, if you're happy to do that, I'll give you 20 cores.
Right. You can adjust.
And however much RAM you need
mm-hmm.
and however much disk space you need, and it'll be done by Monday morning.
You can change the allocation of the resources that virtual machine uses.
Right. Right.
And give it more power.
You
can load a much bigger engine into that and churn through all the data.
Right. Now, in this machine, whatever machine that JD is using, I assume it's not 48 cores.
Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was talking about a Ryzen.
Yeah. So he doesn't have quite that ability. Right. He can smaller still scale. One gets two cores. This one gets
still
one core.
Allocate.
This one gets right. So
same concept, just smaller scale.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And that's the beauty of this sort of thing. So if you've got a big enough machine with enough RAM and enough processing power and enough disk space, you can run multiple operating systems simultaneously, switch back and forth among them willy-nilly, and it all works perfectly.
Yeah, that's what we were doing where I work for quite a while. We were taking all of our individual physical machines when I joined their team, and we were virtualizing them into virtual machines. And when it came time that all of that hardware was at its end of life and not always restarting cleanly when we would apply security updates, the kind of thing where you suddenly would have to get in your find your keys at 10:30 at night
during
the maintenance window and go downtown and press some buttons to make a machine come back up, which was annoying for several reasons. We did that for quite a while, virtualized that stuff, until the machines that we were using, the warranty went up on them, and to extend the warranty was going to be a considerable expense with a comma in it.
Right.
And we said, wow, just for the warranty, and we elected to start migrating those VMs elsewhere.
Yep. With the VMware machines that we had, everything was bladed.
Yes. Sure.
So basically, it's a computer on a card, and you could add more cards to get more cores, more processors, more CPUs. You could add cards to get more disk space. You could add cards to get more memory.
Right.
So, you know, if one of them died, we could just pull it out, replace it.
Yeah.
Done.
Right.
Right. So that's the beauty of those large devices, but those are really designed for large businesses.
Yeah, and they cost as much as a house.
And they cost as much as a house or more. But in terms of what JD is doing, even on a single machine, if it is a beefy enough machine, you can run multiple operating systems simultaneously, switch back and forth among them, and play around. And that's the beauty. And of course, if you're running Linux, all of that is free.
Yeah.
Right. If you're running Windows, you still have to pay for each license that you use.
Sure.
But if you're running Linux, you can put multiple Linuxes and have them do different things. You can run a web server on one and a database server on another. Link them all together. Do whatever you want with it. It's very cool.
And if you get to the point where you don't want to host them anymore, there are places online that will happily take your virtual machine, you upload it to them, press a few buttons, and it fires back up, and then you can still communicate with it across the internet.
Right, because you can package up a virtual machine as a single file and say, oh, I want to give this to AWS now and pay them to run it for me.
Right.
So you can package it up, put it up on AWS, they unpack it, and it's running. You're done.
It's like having your own garage where you store all your stuff, or you can buy a rental unit somewhere that has a garage door on the front. And if you want to, you can buy two or three of those and do them all. But you can migrate and pay rent somewhere else if you don't want to
pay
for the
garage. Excellent analogy.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to steal it, just
please.
So you know. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. Dave, what's up?
Well, I got a follow-up question on the very same topic.
Okay.
What would you... Or just give us the difference between the hypervisor that runs directly on the iron, the silicon, versus something where it runs inside your normal operating system.
Right. So let's see. Here's a couple of examples. If you are a retro computing or retro gaming person and you want to go back to play some games that ran in MS-DOS, you could fire up your computer running Microsoft Windows or running some other operating system, and then use a tool like DOSBox to create a window on your screen.
A virtual machine.
That pretends to be a DOS computer and that emulates a DOS computer and allows you to play that old retro gaming tool. Contrast that with the hypervisor approach, like you mentioned in the beginning of your call, where it is kind of overseeing several independent virtual machines that each themselves are running their own OS, and that those things run as neighbors next to each other rather than one encapsulating the next.
And in the hypervisor, they are running directly on the hardware.
Right.
In something like DOSBox or VirtualBox, the underlying hardware is abstracted.
Yes.
So it's a layer away. So you can pretend to be the type of box you're not. So as Dennis said, if you wanted to run a DOS program on a 386, you can't do that in a hypervisor. But you can tell something like DOSBox, pretend to be a 386 running at, you know, 0.4 gigahertz,
yeah, 16 megahertz,
whatever it is. And the operating system that runs inside that will only see what it's told to see. So that's the big difference. If you're looking to get right to the metal and the highest performance, use a hypervisor. If you need to abstract the hardware from everything else, use a thing like DOSBox or VirtualBox. Now that said, you can run directly in the hardware in VirtualBox, and most people tend to do that, but it's still being not abstracted, but at least filtered.
Right. Yeah.
Through
emulated
the base operating system.
So I will also say that the tools for that run on top of your existing computer and inside the OS that's already running, those tend to be a little bit friendlier to use for the average person. We've reached kind of a strange niche corner of the computing world.
Right.
Admittedly, this is not a tremendously mainstream use. But I would say running tools like DOSBox or like UTM or other tools,
VirtualBox,
they are a little bit easier to use for the day-to-day uses. If you're using hypervisors, people generally have a really good reason to do that. Usually it's a business-related reason.
Right. The average person won't really
do either one of these.
The average person won't do either one, but for the people who do them, the average person who does them will be fine under a product like DOSBox.
Yeah, for casual use.
Right, for casual use. VirtualBox is fine. It's only if you're a serious geek
Or you're paid to do it.
Or you're paid to do it that you would run the hypervisor directly.
Yeah, I've been using VirtualBox off and on, and as Microsoft makes it harder and harder to tolerate themselves,
because
I got a couple of applications that will always be Windows,
right?
So you know, but I'm about ready to build a new machine and start with Linux.
Mm-hmm.
I had read about hypervisors, and I pretty much got the same. Yeah, they're a little more complicated, and for what I'm going to be doing, I don't think I need it, and so VirtualBox is probably the way to go.
Yeah, probably
I think you've hit the nail on the head.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you. All right. Thanks for calling.
So, for example, one of the things I do is play with a lot of Linux versions.
Okay.
It's just as easy to do them in VirtualBox.
Sure.
It takes minutes to spin up a version.
Mm-hmm.
I can just leave it on my hard drive and never run it again if I don't, you know, if I've got the space.
Sure.
I don't need to run bare metal hypervisors.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was working at RIT and we wanted super fast and with a lot of additional features.
Yeah, and flexibility.
The average person, the flexibility, like I said, to say tomorrow you get 40 cores.
Right.
Then a hypervisor is the thing to run.
Yeah.
But that's really what professionals need, not what the average, even talented amateur.
It's a professional tool for professional work.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Oh, hi, Nick. Yes, I have been using Kaspersky for 15 years.
Okay.
I pay once a year, and I've never had a problem. I guess it covers everything. I'm not that versed in it. But I just received a letter from them stating that the subscription is going to not be renewed September 29th, and they are recommending that we switch to Bitdefender antivirus. Are you familiar with that?
Yes. It's one of the ones we talked about today.
I missed the show.
Oh, that's all right. Bitdefender is good.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking to change, Bitdefender is as good as many of the others to change to.
Okay. Is that like Mike Kaspersky, that's all I ever had or all I ever used, no other programs. Does that Bitdefender cover everything like the Kaspersky?
It covers a lot as to whether it it does mostly, it depends on which version you get. Okay, so there's the antivirus alone version. There's also Bitdefender Total Security, which also does malware.
So that's probably what I should have then?
Well, that would
cover.
That would cover as much as Kaspersky does, yes.
So it's the Bitdefender
Total Security.
Okay, yeah. I guess the government is being a Russian company. They've been talking about this for a while, but I just got the letter or the email. I paid till next year, but that's not what I'm... I just wanted to make sure.
Right.
The company Digital River recommends strongly switching to this Bitdefender. Okay, you answered my question. I appreciate it, Nick and everybody.
All right, thanks. Have fun.
Thank you.
It's hard to make that change when you've been happy with a product for as long as people have been happy with Kaspersky, and it's the government who says, you know, we can't have this anymore. They're bad people, apparently. Whether or not you believe that or agree with it, the government has decided that's the way it is, and so we have. We have the situation now where people have to move to another product.
Yeah, it happens.
It happens.
But that's okay. It'll be fine.
Windows does it all the time.
Well, yes, that's
they
true.
Do away with a program and you got to go elsewhere.
The next thing you know, you're
so
on Vista.
What's the difference?
Yeah, it's people change. Programs change. It's hard, but we all live through it. And again...
and that's the name of the game in our industry. You know, there's nothing to stand still.
Exactly. We don't have the luxury of standing still in this industry. Companies go out of business. Companies change what they do. Companies lose focus.
Yeah.
And so, you know, moving to what's best. We're not talking about moving to the new hotness, right? It's not, oh, this is the cool new thing. This is the actually working new thing.
Right.
So that, you know, it's pragmatism, not trendiness, that we're talking about here. So when we talk about moving to another product, generally speaking, it's the practical thing to do as opposed to anything else. So,
and we will always work on your behalf as the person in front of the keyboard. To help guide you and help you make the best decision you can. All we ask is that you call us and let us know what's going on, and we're happy to talk with you and figure out a plan forward.
And if you can throw a few dollars our way in the terms of a donation,
sure,
it helps us keep doing this every week. I know we're not in a pledge drive, but
hey.
We're always looking
to
stay ahead.
That's right. That doesn't mean we won't actively take a pledge during when it's not a drive.
That's right. You can always pledge online. Jazz901.org. There's a big red donate now button.
And if you enjoyed the service you received today,
exactly,
that's
right.
The place to be.
That's the place to be. All right. That music tells me, in fact, it tells all of us, that we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright for staying awake through most of the show. Well done. I want to thank Dennis Worster, who took time off from his valuable Saturday time with his family to come in here and actually provide real answers to real questions. Not that Steve doesn't once in a while, you know, a blind squirrel, you know. Anyway, the point is, he's not as much fun to make fun of when he's not there for me to do it to his face. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everybody who called in. Great questions this week. Great information from all of you. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you, that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in just 166 hours.